Hello and welcome back to A Runner's Life podcast. I'm the host, Marcus Brown. I've gone from a 4:55 marathon down to running a sub 3 hour marathon. The idea of this podcast is to explore what a runner's life is by speaking to runners and experts to learn from their experiences and to expand on our own boundaries of what a runner's life could represent. If you want to get updates on the podcast or want to see what I'm up to, follow me on Instagram at @arunnerslife_podcast and at @TheMarathonMarcus, all one word. If you find value in the show, please subscribe and share it with your community and leave a rating on your podcast platform that you use, as it helps the podcast grow. If you want to support my work directly, you can become a member on Patreon at www.patreon.com/arunnerslife. Thank you for tuning in. Now let's head to the conversation. I just want to give you a little introduction before we head into the conversation. So I recorded two separate conversations with both athletes. The first conversation is going to be with Steph and the second is going to be with Aoife. Both athletes won their respective elite races and earned the Olympic qualifying time for their respective countries. Personally, I was really inspired by their performances just because in the background, both have had to overcome different challenges to get to the race and put in such a solid performance. Watching their performances from the comfort of my chair, not running, it's easy to forget that both athletes had to overcome different challenges within their careers, which can get forgotten when both athletes looked in such good form to be able to be in the position to represent their countries at the Olympics in the marathon distance. It's easy to forget that for them to make the performances look so straightforward, there's so much work that goes into it, work that we're never going to see or hear about, things that are off social media, and just respect to both of them, just looking forward to seeing how they do in the marathon coming up in the Olympics this year. Just to give a little bit of context, when I speak to Aoife, I speak about some of the challenges that she's overcome. To really get a full picture, listen back to episode 12, where it gives a lot more context to what we're talking about. So check that out. But do listen to that after you listen to this episode. Obviously, that's a standard, right? Okay, at this point, you're probably like, just give it a rest, Marcus. We don't want to hear you talking anymore. We want to hear the athletes. So with that being said, let's head to the conversation, starting with Steph. Hey, Steph, welcome to A Runner's Life podcast. How are you?
Hi, Marcus. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I'm good. Just been for a nice swim this morning. So happy the gyms and the pools are back open.
Yes, I think so many people in the UK are just so grateful that we're getting back to kind of some form of normality, if that even existed before.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's just nice, I guess, to just have somewhere different to go rather than just being in the house all the time. Change of scenery.
It does feel like Groundhog Day at parts, doesn't it? So yeah, just like same thing that most days, and yeah, it's just a nice change of scenery.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyhow, just to go back, I was speaking to a runner called Russell Bentley on the podcast, and in the early part of his career, he was coached by Frank Horwell, the renowned UK middle distance coach, who actually coached a number of international athletes. I understand that your current coach, Phil, worked with Frank. Can you kind of share what Phil's running philosophy is and how that looks like in your training?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, Phil was very, very close to Frank. He was a mentor and a dear friend. Phil has, yeah, been my kind of like one and only coach for the last few years, and he has obviously kind of helped me become the athlete I've become today, but also been a very kind of supportive person for me getting through training and preparing for races and getting through any kind of niggles and injuries. And his main philosophy is, it's quite simple really, but just to kind of work hard, focus on myself, not get bogged down by what other people are doing. It's my journey. And yeah, just don't get wrapped up in kind of social media and just focus on the training and work hard and the results will come.
I think that's such wise advice. And thinking about what you just said there about just kind of focusing on your journey, kind of staying in your lane despite all the kind of madness that's happening on social media. I was speaking to Nell Rojas on the podcast and she noted the importance of basically the same sort of thing, not getting too wrapped up in following other people's training numbers or comparing yourself against other runners, but but to trust yourself. And you've been quoted in previous interviews, and I know a lot of people ask you about this in terms of just your terms of your training. And I know that you kind of reduced it a little bit due to like a hip injury, which kind of taught you not to focus too much on the high mileage, but just to combine it with cycling, cross training. Can you kind of share what your training looks like to us?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you're right. That is something I've kind of spoken about a lot, is the cross training as part of my running training. For me, it just seemed to be a good balance of doing a lot of recovery sessions. And this is when I'm like in a marathon build. I do, instead of double run days, I would jump on typically the elliptical trainer to do a kind of aerobic workout, just nothing too hard, not hard sessions, just to replace, I guess, where some people might do two runs, I'll do kind of a run and a cross train. And it just helps me work aerobically, but not having the kind of impact going through my legs, which maybe would carry a bit more fatigue and I guess increase the likelihood of picking up any injuries and niggles, especially if you're maybe tired from a hard session that you've done the day before. So it just means that, yeah, I feel that I can recover a bit better and then bring some quality to my next session. Usually for me, I kind of run 6 days a week. Monday is always a non-impact day, so I'll get down to the pool and again like do some kind of cross train either on the elliptical or on the bike. Typically it has been on the elliptical, but with COVID, when we had kind of no access to gyms, I had a turbo trainer at home, so all my cross training build up to Kew Gardens, the Olympic trials, was actually done on the turbo trainer. So that was still a good way to cross train. Back to the kind of weekly training for the marathon, Tuesdays we'll kind of have a speed session and as well as some S&C, do some weights and get in the gym if we can. Wednesday is an easier day, so I'll do a run of some sort and a cross train as well. And then Thursday we'll often have kind of longer intervals, tempo type session. And again, up into the gym for strength and conditioning. So it's those two strength and conditioning sessions that I'll have a week. Yeah, just to kind of make sure that we're strong and picking up and focusing on any maybe weaknesses that I have to stop me or reduce the chances again of getting injured. And then Friday is another recovery day. And then over the weekend, we'll do a longer run. And sometimes that will include some marathon pace efforts as part of that long run to kind of get a feel of race pace and or as close to race pace as possible when you're on tired legs. I'm always quite realistic that, and don't beat myself up if that pace on the Sunday isn't maybe quite what it will be or hope it will be on the race day. I mean, in the past, when like I trained for London, for example, I was always training around about 236, 238 marathon pace. And then on the day when you're tapered and all you're kind of riding, you're kind of peaking at the right time and you should be peaking in time for that race, then everything comes together and for London that year I ended up running 232. So it's just kind of banking the effort sometimes and not always being so obsessed about the pace as well. And that's definitely something that I've learned, because I've definitely had sessions where I've gone and saying, well, I want to do this pace, and maybe it just hasn't clicked that day or I'm putting in the effort, but I've also had maybe a big week leading up to that session. So you've just got to make sure that you're kind of working hard and in the right zone and keeping as consistent as you can, I think.
Absolutely. And I think you mentioned as well about just the importance of understanding yourself and the recovery side as well, just not getting drawn into that kind of what everyone else is doing and not listening to your body. And yeah, thank you for sharing that background to your training.
No problem.
And I know you said this in your previous interviews before, but you shared that your coach tends to give you kind of like mini motivational pep talks before and after training sessions. Can you share, if it's appropriate, like what he said to you before the Olympic marathon trials at Kew Gardens?
So before Kew, actually, we had a lot of our discussions not directly before the race. I think on race day itself, it was just more like, you know what you need to do.
Yeah.
You've had great block. Just kind of reminding me of all the good sessions I've done and the shape that I'm in. Because I think probably that's something in the past that maybe I've struggled with, is having that self-confidence to kind of believe that I can do it. And going into Q, I actually did feel in a better place with maybe how I could run and how I could perform. So yeah, coach is just always reminding me of the good sessions and also that if we do have bad sessions, that's normal. We can't be 100% and be your best every time we run. So yeah, it's really just ongoing support and encouragement, and yeah, to keep going, and that he'll always be proud because he knows that I'll always give 100%. And as long as I give 100% on race day, and even if that result isn't maybe what we know we can do, then you can't really look back and regret.
Absolutely. And although like the training is important, I think what you highlighted there is the person management as well. It's understanding the person, getting them, like understanding what's working for them as well. So I think that's really cool to hear that.
Yeah, definitely. That's something Phil and I guess like worked on from when we did our reverse marathon together, is if he probably wasn't used to having an athlete that maybe a marathon athlete didn't do high mileage. So it's something that we both, it's been a journey and a lesson for both of us.
Yeah. Now, obviously, this is a podcast where I ask you questions about the marathon, that kind of stuff. But also, I like to ask questions because I'm a runner myself, and I'm basically working my way down from a sub-3 down to a London Championship place. Now, for your first marathon, it was 2:41, and also your current PR is 2:27. Can you kind of pinpoint any key things that you did to help you break 2:30?
Yeah, so I guess one of the things is like reviewing your training to see maybe where you could add a little bit of volume to your kind of your harder session. So if you can maybe see if you can increase the kind of tempo efforts you're doing. And it's also good to like compare sessions to see where the progression is or maybe where you've struggled. But I think what a lot of marathon runners I find, and I do a little bit of coaching myself, and I sometimes have to remind this to my athletes that I coach, is that to run a good marathon, you've also got to have some speed and be able to run a good 5K. And I think often as marathon runners, they kind of sometimes neglect that speed work. So I think that's a key part of that should be in your marathon program, especially if you're looking obviously to get a quicker time. Then it would make sense to, if you want to run a quicker time, you're going to have to run a quicker 5K, 10K, half, and for all to come together. And that is ultimately working on your speed work. So I think that's something that more people should kind of focus on as part of their marathon build.
Yeah, I agree. You want to have the speed which you can extend out rather than trying to find the speed in the marathon block. So yeah, that's so important.
Exactly.
And as a fan watching, just obviously away from me, just watching the race unfold, it's always sort of fascinating to think about the conversations that are happening during the race itself from two points. Firstly, between yourself and the other leading women, and also then secondly, between yourself and the pacers, Kevin and Josh. Can you kind of share what was said?
Actually, the race itself was really quiet. I didn't really sense any chatting amongst the girls. Everyone just seemed very focused. Most of the noise was coming when you passed your kind of plus ones, when you were collecting drinks and you might politely say to a runner ahead of you or behind you, oh, I'm just going to tuck in here to get my drink type thing. But apart from that, amongst the girls, there was actually not much chatter. And then amongst the pacers as well, for the first half when we were all together as a group, they were just really looking back to check that we were all still with them, and they weren't, obviously they wanted to do their job and pace at 74 minutes for halfway, but also there's no point in doing that if no one's following. So they wanted to just check in to make sure we were all there. And then once the kind of group broke away and I was just with the pacers, it was the same, to be honest. They just checked in to make sure that I was okay and that I was still there, and we just kind of got on with it. But yeah, you're right. I guess like in a lot of, well, the other three marathons that I've done previously, there was a lot of chat between different runners because everyone is, yeah, kind of going for different times, and you might end up running alongside someone at 1 minute and then they're gone, and then you find someone else and you might check in to say, oh, what time are you going? Okay, cool, let's work together. But no, Q was very quiet, but which was something I kind of was worried about going into the race, because it's just not something I'm used to. The other marathons I've done, I found the crowds such a lift, and getting to see kind of lots of people you know maybe around the course. I was very fortunate. My family came to Valencia, to have my parents there kind of darting about the course, and my boyfriend's parents as well to cheer me on. So that was a big boost. But for Q, actually, it wasn't an issue because I guess we were doing so many laps that you knew that if you got to that point, you'd see people, and then you need to get back around to the start and they'd all be there again. So the people that were on the side of the course were kind of really enthusiastic and really supportive on the way around. So it was a good boost.
It's always fascinating to hear that. So though, thank you kind of for sharing that. And I appreciate that you've been asked a lot of similar questions about this, the marathon win and the build up and all that kind of stuff. But if you were interviewing yourself right now, what would you ask yourself?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, I have asked myself a lot, like, where, like, what do I think I could have obviously done differently in the race? I don't think if the race had played out slightly differently, I mean, I never, out of all the scenarios I've played through my mind before the race, I never thought that I would have won with that lead. So it would have been interesting to see, like, how much harder I could have pushed myself if the race had played out differently. And I honestly expected it to be a pretty tight group up until the end. And I think that just makes me kind of eager to get another marathon where I can see if I can push myself that bit quicker and see if I can improve my PB even further, and I guess by how much more.
I guess, yeah, there's always that sort of question of like how much, yeah, you can push yourself, but I think you can only do what you can on the day. And
totally.
From a fan looking at it, it looked like, you know, you were strong and in control, but obviously, you know, there's a lot of work that's gone into it. So it kind of seemed like there were more gears that you could have gone into, but you didn't really need to, if that made sense, from the outside looking in.
Yeah, I think that's right. And also, I wasn't focusing on a time for that day. I just wanted to secure the top two spot because that's all I needed to do. So even when the lineup changed and some of the girls that were meant to appear that were faster than me on paper weren't there, and then I was then the fastest on paper, I still was just as nervous because the objective of the race had never changed. So it was still that same focus. And maybe that is something I quite enjoyed of Q though, was not focusing maybe on a time, which is a bit different to what I was used to in the past, because in previous races it's always been about can I PB, and then when I did Valencia it was, oh, can I get that Olympic qualifying time? So I'd go in kind of knowing what pace I wanted to do, where I needed to be at 5k, 10k, I'd have numbers written down in my hand. Whereas for Q, it was just a case of just go in and, yeah, see what happens as the marathon unfolds. But I guess I wouldn't want to do that for every marathon because it maybe might not always stretch your limits depending on the format of the race.
Yeah, just got to, like you said, I think you just read the situation well and dealt with the moment. I think that's kind of really cool to see. And although, like I said, you look strong during the race, you know, on the outside looking in, people could just assume like it's been plain sailing. I know a lot of people go on, yeah, you've been doing it for amount of time in terms of taking part of the marathon, but you've had your fair share of challenges as well. I mean, last October, you were supposed to represent Team GB for the World Half Marathon Challenge, but couldn't do because of injury. So you've had your challenges. I mean, how have you kind of turned those kind of setbacks into like a setup for this race in the Olympics moving forward?
Yeah, that injury the end of last year was kind of the biggest injury I've had. I feel like the other niggles I've had and injuries, like the hip after Berlin, I was only out for a few weeks, really. So and they've never been kind of more than maybe 2-3 weeks where I've had to just ease back and assess. Whereas last year with the ITB, I was out for nearly 3 months. And as each kind of week was ticking by and I was thinking, oh, it's getting closer to Olympic trials. I was meant to start my marathon build on this date. And then that passed and I was kind of only easing back into running. It was a bit nerve-wracking. But I think that's also one kind of blessing with the cross training is when I get injured, I don't have to change too much of my schedule. I only kind of have to increase the volume and the intensity. Like, I don't typically do hard sessions on the cross training, so that's something I need to add, but it doesn't become such a kind of weird change to your schedule that you're having to think, oh, I can't run, what am I going to do? I'm going to have to get used to going on that bike or used to going on that cross trainer. I'm already doing it, I just need to slightly tweak things. And I guess I was fortunate enough to have a race in the diary being Olympic trials during COVID. So it gave me a real motivation to work really hard on the bike when I was injured, so that when I came back to running, I was kind of as fit as I could possibly be. And it was just a case of kind of, yeah, getting the running rhythm back. So, I mean, if I didn't have trials, maybe I would have found it a bit harder to kind of have the motivation to push through with the training when there was nothing on the horizon. But I think in that case, I would have just tried to give myself like a mini goal or a goal for myself that I could set on the bike or something to kind of make sure that I was still had some, felt like I had something to work towards. It doesn't matter really how small or big it is. If you set yourself a challenge, then it should kind of give you hopefully that focus to kind of push through with it.
Yeah, and which you did have, and I think it's amazing that, you know, you kind of kept that going, to be honest. And I know probably a lot of the guests actually listening would want to know this in terms of kind of the Olympics. I mean, how are you kind of preparing for that in terms of like your training camps and just sort of acclimatizing for the heat?
Yeah, so I had quite a long recovery after Q. So, but the race was 3 weeks ago today. So that's us. I'm doing my second run back today. So yeah, got a couple of easier runs to go, and then we'll kind of ease in some more sessions. And then I'll be here in London. Well, this is the plan. Hopefully nothing changes with COVID regulations. But we'll hopefully get away in June for some warm weather training, which will be fun. We'll do that for a month before we need to come back. And then we'll have a couple of weeks before we fly out to Japan, which I guess we've not got that date confirmed, but it should be around 2 weeks before. So yeah, like warm weather training, like I typically, based on the kind of sessions I maybe done in the past, I think I'm generally okay with heat, but I think running a marathon in the heat will be a lot different to kind of a stop-start interval session. So yeah, I'm kind of excited to go out to do some warm weather training and kind of see how my body responds. And then I guess after that, we'll be able to make more of a race plan, I guess, for Japan to see, yeah, where we think that I could kind of try and run and what time I guess I could go for. But yeah, there's definitely a lot to consider, and we'll have to see how training goes. But yeah, it's exciting.
Absolutely. It's been such an amazing pleasure speaking to you. You know, I've been following your journey for a little while and just so looking forward to seeing what you do come Olympics. I mean, the last race was such a, I think just in terms of, we haven't seen racing for such a long time. As a runner yourself, like, you can just appreciate like the work and the effort that's gone into it, and to come out with such a great win. Like you said, you just did what you needed to do. I think it's so inspiring to see from my side as like I go for my marathon goals.
Oh, thank you. What's the next marathon for you?
London Marathon.
Nice. Oh, I love London.
My first London was 4:55. So yeah, that's why it'd be so cool just to be able to earn that London Championship place. So that's a long-term goal.
Great. Well, I wish you all the best with your training as well.
Thank you. And where can people follow you online, Steph?
So I'm mainly on Instagram, Steph_Davis26. I'm also on Twitter, but I'm not, I'm still getting used to the Twitter way of things.
Aren't we all Twitter, Steve and me? So thanks for being a guest on the Runner's Life podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Let's just take a quick pause to tell you about the sponsors of the podcast. This episode is supported by Let's Do This. It is a company that's mission is to make it easier for people to find their perfect race. Whether you're looking for a 5K fun run or a double Ironman, Let's Do This lists more mass participation sports events than any other website on the planet. These events include running, triathlon, cycling, obstacle racing, swimming, and many others. To get £10 off selected events, please use the discount code, or one word, A Runner's Life, and use the link www.letsdothis.com/A Runner's Life. Now let's head back to the conversation. Hi Aoife, welcome back to A Runner's Life podcast. How are you?
I'm very good. Very good, thank you.
Congrats on winning the Cheshire Elite Marathon and now earning the Olympic qualifying time. Before we get into the race itself, I mean, how are you feeling about earning that qualifying time?
Oh, it feels incredible. I've kind of been pinching myself all week. Finally starting to kind of come to terms with it now. I suppose it's just one of those things that has been a goal for a very long time, for years, you know, and for it to kind of finally materialize is just incredible.
Absolutely. And it was amazing because we're watching your race online, but the thing that sort of slightly annoying was that they only sort of focused on the men's side, so we couldn't really sort of see what's happening in your side, and then the tracking was off, so I only sort of saw you when you came out at the end.
Yeah, I heard a few people mention that to me afterwards. All right, so yeah, I think it was a difficult watch for a lot of people that were looking to kind of follow me at home. Actually, my sister was trying to watch, you know, and the tracking went down, and so she rang the race director. She found his number on the website or something. She said she'd give him a call. You know, she was like, I want to know how my sister's doing. And he was lovely. He updated her, and he was like, call back again in a while and I'll give you another update. So she found a way around it anyway, which was great.
That is awesome. That's like family first, you know what I mean, getting it done.
Absolutely.
Because the thing I found as well, like, I found myself actually having to put comments into like the race when it's going live, going, what's happening with Aoife? Like, and then people, I think, who are watching it there then would comment on it and say, oh, I saw her at this point, she's looking strong or whatever. So that is basically, I think, for most of us, our only update until we saw you at the end.
Yeah. I'd say you were more nervous than I was.
I think it's just cool. I think obviously being, you know, part of the same kind of coaching stables, it's kind of cool. I think we're all behind you, and it's just amazing to kind of see just the work that you put into it as well. So no, it's amazing to see, and looking forward to kind of seeing what's going to be next, really. So it's obviously your first marathon since Dublin 2019, where you won that race and got the national title. So just being mindful of just the global pandemic and everything else, I mean, how concerned were you about being able to get the opportunity to actually run the qualifying sub 2:29:30 marathon? Because it was kind of looking a bit touch and go at places.
It was, yeah. Like, it was like, so I suppose after Dublin, my initial plans were to run Vienna the following April in 2020, you know, to try and qualify. Obviously, the pandemic happened and that was cancelled and everything. So that was a bit of a blow at that time. And at that point, you know, the Olympics were still planned to go ahead in 2020. So I was gutted that I just hadn't the chance, you know, to try and qualify. Obviously, as it went on, the Olympics were postponed, which obviously worked out in my favour, given that. So kind of, yeah, and I suppose even all through 2020, all the races were being cancelled, you know, even the ones in the spring now, the big marathons that people would normally go to try and qualify were all cancelled. You know, there was kind of some hopes that maybe one of them might put on an elite-only marathon, but didn't seem to happen. And it was actually last, maybe September, October, I came across, I don't know, I just put into Google elite marathons or something like that, and this Wrexham elite marathon popped up, and I was like, oh, looks good, you know, that this can go ahead. So I immediately forwarded it onto my coach John, and he just said, look, sign up for it and we'll see what happens, which was great, which was lucky really, because it seemed to be the only option in the end. And it was only actually 2 weeks before this marathon that it was 100% confirmed that it would go ahead. So it was really touch and go up until even 2 weeks before this marathon, because it was initially meant to be in Wales and the restrictions are different there. So the race director, Michael Harrington, had the foresight to kind of measure a course just over the border in England, which was lucky actually, because racing still isn't allowed in Wales as far as I know, but he managed to get this one up and running and approved and everything just in time, and it happened. So it was great. So it was a bit nerve-wracking for a few weeks beforehand as well.
I can imagine, and you know that you're in the shape to run that time as well, and it's just about getting that opportunity to do it. And it's actually quite funny listening to that story. Like you said, I had to Google elite marathons to find one, and to find it actually came up.
Yeah, I know, it's slim pickings at the moment. Like, you know, it's so different, because normally, you know, you'd get a marathon every week if you wanted.
Yeah, it all worked out in the end, which is good. Can you sort of talk about how your training went in the build-up to the Cheshire Marathon?
Yeah, so I mean, it was difficult at times. Now, we were allowed to kind of meet with one other person outdoors, so you know, I was able to have a training partner anyway, so that was extremely helpful. But yeah, the training itself went largely to plan. You know, I didn't get any injuries, or you know, I didn't have to miss any sessions or anything like that, which is all helpful for the confidence, you know, knowing that you've had a really good block and you didn't miss out on anything for the head. That's really helpful. And yeah, kind of hit the targets most of the time. You know, obviously there were one or two off days in that, but largely the training went to plan, which was great.
Yeah, I think that's so refreshing to hear. Like you said, it's not always going to be like 100%, but the majority of it went well. And I'm probably putting words in your mouth here, but for me, I know I get a lot of confidence from doing the long runs, especially after doing a long week and you've done your long run at like marathon pace and you've done it week in, week out. You kind of know that you're generally there.
Yeah, absolutely. You can go into the race with confidence, kind of knowing that you have done everything you possibly can, like, you know, there was no kind of stone left unturned, really.
Yeah. And also you mentioned about, you know, having a training partner as well. And I think that's so important, because as much as we like to do things on our own sort of steam, just having someone else to keep us accountable and push us sometimes further than we would have done if we would just been running by ourselves is so important.
Yeah, it is. I wouldn't have been able to do some of those sessions by myself, definitely. It was really good to have someone there, just to kind of push you along, as you say. And you know, if one person is kind of not feeling it on the day and the other person is, they'll drag you along, and vice versa, you know.
Yeah. And also, I know we've coached by John as well, and I don't know if he does this for you as well, but sometimes, probably less so now, but I remember it'd be particular sessions and you'd just message him and be like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's like the world has fallen out type thing, and he's just like, it's cool. I mean, yeah, do you still find he's been able to kind of help you be a bit more level-headed in terms of just how you approach when things go well and also not so well?
Yeah, absolutely. And that as well is so helpful. I mean, like, as I said, like, there was a couple of sessions that didn't 100% go to plan, and you know, you'd kind of be kicking yourself, being like, oh, you know, I didn't do well there, and what does this mean? Does this mean like I'm not going to be able to do the marathon in you know what I had planned? But yeah, so I would always just drop John a message afterwards, and he'd get on to me, and you know, he'd rationalize it, and you know, make it you know, tell me that it's not the end of the world, and you know, kind of dust yourself off and just get on to the next one. You know, I mean, we're all only human, and we're all going to have bad days.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's like sometimes you're doing those runs, it's like, I've not got it anymore. I have got it, but I haven't got it. It sort of flickers between sometimes. But you need that person between to sort of help you out. But then I guess by speaking to them, you know, you end up getting those skills yourself and being able to kind of manage it a lot better moving forward, which I think is definitely an important thing to have.
Definitely, yeah. I'm not so hard on myself anymore now, you know, and John definitely helped me to do that. You know, before I would probably kind of beat myself up a bit too much over kind of not having a good session, and you know, I'd be in foul humor for the day, sort of a thing. Yeah. But now, you know, I kind of understand things a bit better, and you know, obviously you'd be a bit disappointed if the session didn't go well, but you know, you just get over it and get on with it, really.
Yeah, I almost feel a little bit unfair asking this question, because I want to sort of talk about some of the key things that you did to sort of go from, you know, to 2:32 to, you know, sub 2:30. And I know generally the answer could be consistency, the long runs, training partners and things like that. So I always hate when people ask me this question, because I think, well, it's not like a magic workout. But is there anything that you look back on and you think was some of the key things that helped you achieve that Olympic qualifying time?
Like, I mean, it is consistency, really, is the big thing. I suppose since Dublin in 2019, like, and, you know, kind of throughout the pandemic, I just knuckled down, and like, I've been running quite high mileage weeks and stuff like that. And yeah, just getting the sessions in. I mean, like you say, there's no real secret to it. It's just keeping it up, really, and showing up every day to get your training done. I suppose kind of having done the 2:32 in Dublin, you know, gave me that little bit more confidence as well. And I suppose it helped me to believe in myself a bit more, you know. So over the past year, I believed that I could do the Olympic qualifying time, and that, you know, that in itself is, you know, extremely helpful in getting you there.
Absolutely. And sort of moving to your, obviously, the marathon itself, and I like the way that you mentioned it on Strava, when another Sunday run, and some people might look at that and think, oh, you're not taking it that seriously, but then I can appreciate from your side, like, if that's something you do, or the long runs on a Sunday, it does almost become another long run. You don't make it more than it actually is. It's just a little bit extra, a little bit further, but you've done the majority of it before.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's exactly how I kind of looked at it and approached it on that weekend. You know, obviously I had to travel and go to a different location to where I would normally do my long runs. But, you know, that is what it was at the end of the day. Just, I would have kept the same routine to what I would have done every Sunday morning for my long runs. And, you know, it kind of helped with the nerves a bit as well, you know, that it's nothing different to what I do every week, a bit longer, but that's it, you know.
Yeah, I think it's such a good way to sort of keep you grounded. Like you said, but obviously moving to a different location to run, like, you're still keeping the same routines, focusing on that stuff you can't control. But I think it's such a cool mindset to have. And I thought it was a really cool detail that I know some people might miss and might think that you're kind of not taking it seriously or whatever, but I don't think that's the case. It's just that real sort of grounded nature of what it actually is.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, of course, I do take it seriously, and I take every Sunday long run seriously, because you want to hit the paces even in training, again, you know, to have the confidence that you can do it. So yeah, I guess that's pretty much what I meant by that on Strava.
Absolutely. So let's move to the race itself, which was just over 7 laps of a flat rural sort of countryside loop with a couple of, you know, it looked like a triangle. So can you kind of talk about what the race was like and what the course is like?
Yeah, so it was kind of country roads, so quite enough in that triangular shape. So there was, we started over on one side, it was just like a straight road for like probably a mile, and then you'd turn and then go down. It's the road is actually called the Straight Mile. So that was just another like fairly straight long mile, and then you turn another corner, and this corner was quite a sharp corner which kind of got tough as the laps went on, just kind of having to kind of navigate yourself around that, and then just go on to a bit more of a main road then that you come onto, and then again a nice straight run there to the next corner where you're back onto the road that you started on again. So yeah, there was no kind of surprises there really, you know. It was a good route, like flat for the most part. You know, I think you can have no complaints really about it, apart maybe from that one sharp corner.
Yeah. What was the kind of strategy for the race?
So kind of the plan was to kind of go out at 5:40-ish pace, you know, and kind of ease my way down from there then. So I did that for maybe the first 3-4 miles, and then kind of edged my way down to kind of 5:30, between 5:35 and 5:40 pace really. Did have a few that were a bit faster, kind of 5:33s and 5:32s. But yeah, it was just kind of really to be consistent. There was nothing dramatic, just, you know, feel comfortable with the pace that you're running, because as we all know, no matter what, it's going to start getting hard about mile 20-22. So I was just kind of very conscious of, you know, making sure that I felt comfortable, that I wasn't pushing too hard in the earlier miles, and then just go for it, you know.
I guess it's that sort of race management. It's something that John is speaking to me about as well. It's just not kind of, I know you know this more than me to be honest, but it's like not going too far above your threshold pace, because it's so easy to go too quick early on and then blow up. Yeah, midway. Yeah.
What happens, you know, because you feel so fresh at the start that you feel like you can go that bit faster, but you know, 26.2 miles is a long way to go, so no point in biting the bullet and going out too fast too soon.
Absolutely. And how did it work with sort of other runners and I guess the groups? Did you kind of work with other runners to kind of work to a pace, or how was that? Were people kind of, you know, helping each other, or they're kind of like, no, I'm going to do this my own way type thing? How did it kind of work in the lead pack?
Yeah, so like it went off in waves, like kind of because of COVID. So just in kind of small groups going off together, and it was based on our predicted time. So everyone in my group basically would have been aiming for a similar time to me, which was great. So we did. Yeah, I was in a decent pack of guys for most of the race, probably the first kind of five laps before people kind of started breaking up. So I was kind of just, yeah, knocking about in the pack with them for the first 5 miles, and they were really good, actually really helpful. You know, there was a couple of guys there just in the front of the pack, and kind of turned to me at one point and they said, look, you're going to the Olympics, you look so relaxed. And that was about probably mile 15 or 16, and you know, that gives you a boost then as well, just to be told that. So it was a really nice group, and they were really helpful.
That's so amazing to hear, because I don't know, for me, I kind of don't want to hear that during the race. Maybe it's because I sort of feel like I want to get to the end before the result is, because I feel sometimes that if you start dreaming during the race, then you could kind of take your foot off the gas. And how do you kind of manage that kind of ego soothing type thing? But you're like, I still need to kind of put the work in.
Yeah, I still have another 10 miles to go. Like, No, I would... You know, that would push me on. That would spur me on even more. That's kind of the person I am. Do you know, like when you see people out in the course and they're, you know, telling you how great you're doing, you know, it gives you a boost. So for me, it was helpful.
Yeah, that makes sense. Obviously, like you kind of really want that rather than people booing you going, you're not going to do it. You suck.
Yeah.
Like, no, I'm pretty sure I don't, to be honest. Yeah. So no, that kind of makes a bit of sense. So yeah, if you're getting that sort of, those comments that, you know, you're looking strong, you're looking in control, then it reinforces what you're feeling as well. I don't know, it's like when you're, I don't know, you know this anyways, but like it's not forcing it, you're still in that pace, but you still want to make it look like you're running easily. You kind of like, if you pass someone, it looks like you're running easy, then you know you're in a good place. But if you're past them, you look like you're struggling and all that kind of stuff and everything's out of whack, then you kind of know that you're really pushing it too much.
Yeah, and you don't want that, especially kind of at that point in the race. You know, you do want to be looking relaxed and comfortable, and you know, like you can keep going for another while, of course, you know. Yeah, so it's definitely good to be told that you look that way, and you know, even just to be told that, as you said, just kind of reinforces it yourself, and then you kind of think, yeah, I am feeling relaxed and I am feeling good, and you know, that's very helpful as well.
Absolutely. And like you said, towards the end of the marathon, you know, it gets a little bit tougher. I mean, how do you kind of deal with those last few miles when it's getting a little bit harder?
Yeah, so like in this race particularly, you know, because it was the looped course, you know, it kind of gets to you after a while. No, you probably know because you've done a looped course yourself. Like, I suppose you just have to break it down. So the first three laps went fine, you know, because you're feeling really good. Lap four was probably fine as well, and then from there you're like, you know, you still have three laps to go, you've already done it four times, and then so you just have to kind of be like, look, it's two more, and then the last one will take care of itself, like you're going to do the last one, you know. So yeah, you know, I kind of broke it down like that, got through five and six, and I was hurting now on the last loop, I have to say. I think just that, as I mentioned, that corner, you know, my quad on my left leg, because it was kind of going around the left turn, I think, you know, I think it took its toll, and my left quad was hurting quite a bit at this point. And I just had to knuckle down. I just really like kind of took it mile by mile then, you know, even just looking at the road, I was like, get to the end of this road, turn, and then you've 2 miles left. And then, you know, kind of the same on the next one, you know, when you turn the next corner, you can actually see the finish line, you know, and just go for it.
Yeah.
So I kind of had to break it down like that, but it was definitely a mental battle, you know.
Yeah, I can imagine, but you did it. And I think it's amazing to kind of hear just that experience of what you went through. So you've done the race now. So what is the kind of plan moving forward towards the Olympics? And I mean, how are you kind of planning for that and looking beyond?
Yeah, so we're myself and John are kind of, we've been talking about what our possibilities are really now over the next few months. Like, ideally, I'll be going away to train kind of in the warm weather, obviously, to get used to that for Japan. I haven't really kind of settled on a place yet. You know, it's a bit more difficult than usual. this year, obviously, with restrictions and everything like that, and kind of what the rules are in different countries and all of that. So we're just trying to kind of figure all of that stuff out at the moment. But I'll hopefully go away for maybe 4 to 6 weeks, probably for June and the first couple of weeks of July. And then we'll be heading over to Japan, I think, kind of mid-July, kind of third week of July sort of a thing, you know, ideally kind of 3 weeks before my race. And we'll be staying in a holding camp over there. So each country has their own kind of holding camp. So we'll be staying in the Irish one for the few weeks and then head up to Sapporo, I suppose, before the marathon. And then that'll be that. So, yeah, it's exciting, you know, kind of what the next few months will hold now.
Absolutely. And I'm just sort of thinking, like, for you, it's just, I can imagine it, it's just like, you're just doing you, you're just doing what you've done. And it must be quite surreal as well, especially in Ireland, in terms of, this is quite big in terms of like how you're looked upon. You know, you've obviously just gone under sort of Sonia Sullivan's record as well. And, you know, you go into Olympics. So it must be an amazing feeling back home.
Oh, yeah. Like the amount of support I got, the amount of messages and calls and everything that I got after the race was incredible. You know, as I said to somebody, it was like, you know, I suppose over the last few months, I was just so focused on myself and my training and, you know, what I was doing to get there and to get the result. And obviously I knew how much it meant to me, you know, to do it. But it was afterwards, and, you know, people were calling me and, you know, in tears and everything, I realized kind of how much it actually means to everyone else as well, which was, it was mind blowing, really.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, taking a step back, and you've obviously got other people's feelings about it, but from my first podcast conversation, something that really inspired me with that, with your running journey, wasn't a linear journey. I mean, you had a lot of success at the start, and then you had some middle years where we were kind of trying to find your way, then you had to really rediscover what your why was for running, and obviously then that took time to get to where you are now. And only you will really know, like, the work and the dedication and the highs and lows that it's taken to get to this point. So although the Olympics are a massive external motivation, I mean, for anyone, for any athlete to compete and represent their country, I just want to look at it, the internal motivation beyond all that kind of stuff. I mean, what's your kind of why to, you know, get out of bed in the morning and go to the Olympics and, you know, do your best and, you know, represent your country and represent yourself in the best way possible?
Yeah, so, like, I suppose, like, Olympics and everything like that aside, you know, I'm just another runner. And, you know, like most runners, you know, we are all kind of going out to improve on ourselves, you know, over whatever distance, over whatever time you want to get, you know, whether it's, you know, 17-minute 5K to try and improve on that, or in my case, you know, with the marathon, you know, we always want to go out and get new PBs. And, you know, I suppose I'm no different in that sense. And it's just brought me to this amazing place where I got to a point that I can, you know, run for my country now. And yeah, like any runner, you get up and you train every day for self-improvement, really, and, you know, to feel good about yourself at the end of the day.
I think you're downplaying it, though, when you say you're another runner, because there's lots of other people that have gone to run, probably not run in the States. Some people have gone to the States and not kicked on. They find they kind of burn out and they just fall out of love of running. But you, to come back, there's something in you, do you know what I mean, that is special. As much as I know you're not going to blow your own trumpet, because I know it's a cultural thing as well in Ireland that people just generally don't do that the way they do it in the States. But I'm saying it to you because I feel like there is something there that is an amazing that spark.
Yeah. I guess I do have a lot of determination when it comes to running anyway, you know. I suppose, yeah, it's just in my blood. You know, it's just that one thing that, you know, I suppose, like you mentioned there, when I stopped for a while in those years, kind of in between, you know, there was always that feeling that something was missing, you know, and I missed running when I wasn't able to do it. You know, I'd always kind of keep looking at race results and kind of looking to see how people were doing. And, you know, I was always kind of keeping in touch with it. So yeah, when I made the decision to go back to run, and with me and running, it was like, you know, it wasn't ever, you know, I was kind of all or nothing for me, you know. It was like I was going at it the whole hog or not at all. So that was my kind of thing. And yeah, so once I got my head around that I wanted to go back, I knew I was going at it kind of 100%.
But it must be amazing to sit back now and like prove yourself right, because there was obviously a decision made where you could have been like, no more running. But to look back at it now, obviously it's easier to look back and join the dots, but it must be an amazing feeling to, like I said, to prove yourself right and know that it was the right decision.
Oh yeah, 100%. You know, I would like to go back and thank my my former self for making that great decision and get me back into the running, because it is like it changed my life, you know, just the people that you meet through this and you know, the opportunities that have come along now, you know, it really has been life changing.
Absolutely. So as we kind of move towards the end of the conversation, where can people follow your journey online?
So I'm on kind of most of the social media platforms. I'm on Instagram, Aoife Cook Fitness, on Facebook by the same, Aoife Cook Fitness, and I'm on Twitter by just my own name. So I post up there kind of about how I'm getting on, if anyone wants to give it a follow.
Aoife, it's been amazing to see your journey and also within our coaches sort of training group, and just to see you, you know, diligently put the work in and go for your goals. I mean, it helps people like myself and other people in the stable and obviously outside the stable as well to kind of just, I think for me personally, just expand my own frame of reference just to be the best runner that I can be. So no, thank you for doing what you're doing, to be honest.
No problem at all.
And thanks again for being a returning guest for a Runner's Life podcast, and good luck for the Olympics. I feel like, I'm not sure I should say good luck, but just because it almost seems like it's going to be, it's in the hands of the gods, because obviously you're still doing the work. Obviously have a good Olympics, I think I'll say.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of A Runner's Life. If you found value in this episode and you want to support the show, please share with your community, post on your social media channels, and encourage them to listen and subscribe. If you want to support my work directly, you can become a member on Patreon at www.patreon.com/A Runner's Life. If you want to get updates on the podcast or you want to see what I'm up to, you can follow me on Instagram at @A Runner's Life_podcast and at @TheMarathonMarcus. Your time is valuable, so thank you for spending your time listening to this episode of A Runner's Life podcast.